Accession number 14599, reel 3.
John Hall, reel 3. Now, Mr. Hall, you're going to tell me as much as you can remember of your experience of the Battle of Third Ypres, aren't
yes,
you?
Yes, that's right. Well, we went up, and we were I forget the name of the place now, just outside Ypres itself. That wasn't in the. We went and assembled there, and then we went over and went up to the front line. But it was terrible. It's all mushy mud. Our own artillery had broken the dikes, and the whole of the place was flooded with water, and. Some of our chaps died in the fell in and couldn't get out. Well, in one case there was one of our chaps. He was up to his neck in water. We were trying to get him out, but we had so many casualties trying to get him out. They pulled us away. And one of our chaps said, "Do you know what happened?" Dr. Gorn, that was our regimental doctor, went out and gave him a shot of morphine and let him go. They couldn't get him out. It was too dangerous. We were under direct fire from the German trench, and they tried all sorts of things, you know, as best they could, and they couldn't get him out. He just died in the mud.
So how did you walk through this mud?
Well, you just had to try and keep going as best you could.
Did you have sort of roads made, duck boards or?
Oh, we had some duck boards, yes. In some places you didn't. If you had duck boards, you weren't too bad. But some places you're up to your knees in water. You see. The people there had made dikes and drained a lot of the land, and there was a lot of water in one place and dry another. Well, then our people were shelling it and burst these dikes, and of course the whole blinking lot got flooded. You're up to your knees in mud all the time.
What was your objective, you know, at 30? What were you there for?
Well, we were there to stop the Germans' attack. Yes, yes. Well, we went into St. Julian, and our objective was the cemetery. But we got right through the cemetery on the other side and captured several German prisoners. And after that, we just had to hold the line for some time. Then we came out for a rest.
Were there many sort of casualties lying about from that battle?
Oh, yes. That's an awful lot of casualties there.
Did you ever have to help with that?
Well, if some of your pals got hit, if you could do anything for them, you did it. You know, either bandage a leg up or an arm or something like that.
And did any of your pals get hit?
Oh, yes, yes. Several of our chaps got wounded, killed. That's right. Yes, all my gun team bar me was killed. We were bracketed. We were bracketed. We'd been firing. And all of a sudden, shells came from everywhere. And, you know, the chap, the stretcher bearers came in, went after to quieten down a bit, and took us all to hospital. I was a stretcher coach there. And I woke up in the hospital, the attendant hospital, and there was a sheet over me. So I pushed it aside, and I saw a skirt and a pair of white shoes going along. So I said to her, nurse, and she came out. She said, oh, is this expect I was alive. So she said, I'll just call the doctor, because I was hit over the thigh and there was all blood down here, and I was hit, just, I don't know if you see the mark, it's still there now.
Yes, I can.
Yeah, I was
yes,
hit.
I can see.
I had a piece of shrapnel in there and I was completely knocked out. And I never come to conscious until I got in hospital. And then I was in hospital for some long time. I got on the train and we went down to Camillus to a hospital there for some time. And then they sent me convalescent to near Trouville, the other side of Le Havre. There was a big convalescent camp there, up on the hills. And one of our chaps that had been there before was in the train with me. He said, here, I tell you what to do, he said. When we get to a destination, he said, start limping. So I said, why? He said, you'll see. He said, you start limping. So I thought, oh, you must know what he's talking about. So I started limping. And there was a lot of ladies there with ambulances. A lot of English ladies had brought their own ambulances out. And this one said, touched me on the shoulder. She said, this way, soldier. And set me in her ambulance. Then she gave us all cigarettes. Well, I thought, well, this is good. And when she got the ambulance full, she started off, and away we went. And we got to this convalescent camp right over on the hills, and they had a tea roll waiting for us. We'd been there about a good hour, and then we heard a band coming. And it was all these other fellas that had marched up from the station.
They hadn't been told to limp.
Yeah. Well, we were in the line there, and I got hit, and we got in the ambulance.
This is going back to your 30th experience.
Yes.
Yes.
And all of a sudden the ambulance stopped. And I said to the chap, RAMC chaps, he said, we've got to wait till the shells fall there. And then as soon as that shell falls, he said, we go. And shell came down and burst at the crossroads, and he put it in full gear, and away we shot past this hellfire corner and got over before the next shell come over. It was intermittent shelling, and of course the drivers had learnt by experience what happened, and there was no other road to go on. So they had to go on this road, and every I forget how long it was. Every so often, the Germans used to drop a shell on the crossroads. And of course, they had to go across the crossroads to get to the hospital.
How do you rate the medical attention you had all the time you were in?
Oh, very, very good. The sisters, they were Queen Alexandra Nursing Service sisters. They were really good. I didn't think much of the doctor, though, when he kept saying, you know, we've got to get you fit. You'll have to go back again, you know. He came in one day, said, oh, you're doing nicely, he said. You're doing nicely. Then afterwards he said, sorry, old chap, he said, you'll have to go back. Yes, it was some of the times it was really scary. I know every time we had to go over the top, Captain Mann, you know, the captain, our captain was Captain Mann. Mann Crossman and Pauline's beer place, you know. Mann Crossman's beer. And
did you respect him?
Oh, yes, he was a wonderful chap. Wonderful chap.
How about the other officers? How did you get on with them?
Oh, I got on with them all fine. I got on with them very, very well. One of our majors, Major Lewis, he was sent to divisional headquarters. He was a very nice chap. Well, they'd all do what they could for you, you know. But we had one cocky one come out from England, you know, with the reinforcements. And I'm standing in the trench and he come along and he said, don't you salute an officer? I said, what? He said, don't you salute an officer? I said, well, I said, we do when we're out at rest. I said, but up here, not up over here. I said, we've got all our work cut out to watch for the Germans. He said, well, next time you see me, he said, you salute. Our chaps are saying, what the devil's he talking about? He said, he'd only just been promoted to be an officer, come out from England. Don't you salute an officer?
Did you ever suffer from lice while you were in the trenches? From lice?
Oh, your shirt used to get full of them. You'd take your shirt off and shake it. They're all in the seams. Oh, you should suffer cruel. Bite you to pieces. But then every now and again we'd get somewhere where we could have a bath, and they gave us clean clothes, just clean shirts and that sort of thing. That was lovely. Sometimes we'd get to a place where they had showers, and sometimes they had mobile showers, you know, on a lorry. Just rigged them up outside in the open.
Were you able to go out to have drink and that sort of thing when you were out of the line?
Oh, yes, when you were at rest. Yes. When we were at Marley Means, that was on the French coast, used to come out there for a rest. It was a mile in town. There was two cafes there, and of course our blokes nicknamed them. There was three French girls used to be serving there. The boys called it the Three Cows. And then there was another one that had a wind-up organ. You had it and it was playing, you see. And they called that the Sod's Opera. That's what they did, you know. Good as you laugh.
The Three Cows and the Sod's Opera.
Sod's Opera, yeah. We had some very nice times there at times.
I was thinking, you know, you were young men, weren't you, at this time. Did you miss women, you know, girlfriends, and, you know, how did you sort of cope with it?
Oh, we did. The only women we saw were the women in the Red Cross women, the nurses. Used to see the nurses, but you've got no time to ever talk to them, you know. You just see them.
How about the French women? Did they sort of set up brothels and things?
There's a brothel. We were down at Kelly. We were out for a rest. We went down to Kelly. Some of us were attached to the regiment, the police. The British police used to put a police station there in Calais, and they had a section there to control any Englishmen, any British that got in there. So we went down there. We were attached to these police station, and this police sergeant said, just received a telephone call. We've got to go to 280 Rue Dupont. 280 Rue Dupont. I don't know where that is. He was down on the front somewhere. So we went down there, and it was a brothel. And apparently there was a big Australian there, and he'd been playing hell. And of course they'd phoned up to the police and sent us down there. So as I spoke French, this sergeant said to me, "You're green," he said, "you can chat to the madam." I went in and I said, You phone for police. "You police?" said yes. "You go. I don't want any police. Don't want police." But there was an Australian there, and he was playing hell. He'd got a little black girl, Nigerian or some black, real black girl, and he'd holding her up by one leg and pouring beer all over her bottom. So I said to this madam, I said, "What about him?" I said, "You might want to get him out of here." "You go, I fix him. I got outside a little while after. Four or five women got hold of this Australian and slung him out the door. But when we got him, I said, "Come on, what have you been up to?" He said, "Bloomin' Sheila's." "Oh, bloody Sheila's," he said. Anyway, they didn't charge him with anything. They just took him back. He had to come back with us. I don't know what happened to him after that. But there's quite a fight going on round about near this brothel with some English sailors and French people. past one of the roads, and this police sergeant went over to see. He didn't call on us to go there. He went on his own. He sorted it out somehow or other. But of course there was all that sort of thing going on.
Perhaps it was a relief to get back to the front, was it?
Yes.
You know, after this.
Yes.
Yes. You were saying, you know, after this second wounding and after your period of recuperation at Trouville camp, wasn't it?
Yes.
Did you then rejoin your regiment once the
doctor
had
passed
you?
Yes, I rejoined the regiment.
Yes. Well, where did you actually rejoin them? Where were you then? When you actually joined them?
Now, let me think. Phyllis Bretnell, that's right.
How much of the regiment was there when you rejoined them, you know?
Well, you know, there was a lot of new chaps there, you see. Reinforcements come up, and a lot of our original men had gone. All my section that I was in, there was none of them left. It was all new chaps just come out from England. And the casualties were terrific.
Would it be about this time when you were you went into the 47th Machine Gun Battalion? This would be the time when the machine gun battalions were being formed, would it be?
Yes, that's right. First of all, we had one machine gun to a battalion, and also a Lewis gun. Well, then they formed machine gun companies, and they had one machine gun to each section, and there was four sections, four machine guns. And each company had four sections, so there's eight machine guns. That was a machine gun company. You were attached to the battalion then, you see. But then machine guns began to come out in quantity, and we got enough for the whole regiment. In the finish, I forget how many. There were dozens of them. There was four to each section. And there was four sections to a company. That's four, and eight. And four companies to a battalion. It's another four. So we were well off from the machine guns afterwards. We couldn't have put a barrage down. But at the first, they only had one per gun. One gun per regiment, and also a Lewis gun, one Lewis gun.
So what difference did it make to you when you went into the 47th Machine Gun Battalion? You know, how did that affect you and your war?
It was different altogether. When you were in the infantry, you know, it seemed to be different regiment altogether. The 47th Division was the colonel of the 47th was Lord Portal, and the adjutant was the Honourable Major Dill, who became General Dill in the last war. Yeah.
And I think you also had something to do with Montgomery, didn't you?
Oh, yes, Monty. He used to come and address the troops, you know. And he was always, I think he'd been a cricketer or something. He said, "We're going to hit them for six. Hit them for six." But he had that clip way of talking, you know. The NCOs must always support their officers, you know, that sort of thing.
Because I suppose he wasn't well known at that time, was he?
Oh, no. is Colonel Montgomery. And he was the, they called it CIDS-2. That was second in command of the division. Colonel Montgomery. But then I didn't see, the next time I saw him was in the Marsh Retreat. We were coming back through Bapaume, and on the left-hand side, before you get to Highwood, there was a great big mound, which had a windmill on the top of it, but that, it had been blasted by shell fire, and the windmill was gone. But Monty was sitting up on the top there with a pair of glasses. And as we came along, he came down and he said, "You front line?" "Front line, yes, sir." We had to give way because they broke through the 21st Division, 21st Scottish Division. And of course,
you were short of ammunition, dear.
Yes. And he said, "I'll see to that." And by the time we got down to near Amiens, now where do we retire to?
Don't worry about that, because I shall ask you about the March retreat
yes,
a bit later, because I want you to tell me as much about that as you can possibly remember, Mr.
Yes.
Hall. And I know you're going to. Your memory is amazing.
Yes.
But now we're really into the time when you were reformed with the 47 Machine Gun Battalion. What was your first action after that? Because you were telling me this was very different, being in that battalion, than being in the infantry.
Oh, yes.
So, can you remember where you went into action once you went into the Machine Gun Battalion?
Bourlon Wood.
Now, could you tell me about that? You know, what your experience of Bourlon Wood was?
Well, it was the Germans had a lot of machine guns, and also a lot of they were able to send over a lot of shells. So lumps were coming, pieces of tree were coming down, and when you get machine guns firing in wood, they whistle, you know. They go, all the time.
Would this have been after the Battle of Cambrai?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes, did you
March retreat was...
Yes, did you witness anything of that? Because we're talking now really of late 1917, aren't we?
Yes.
Did you know anything about the Battle of Cambrai?
I know. We went up there after the Battle of Cambrai. Mm. We were holding the line up there, and what was the name of that village now? It wasn't the Flesquiers. I'm forgetting the names of the villages.
Not to worry, if you can remember, you know, what you heard about the Battle of Cambrai.
Oh, well, there was a lot of tanks. That was when we got masses of tanks, and the tanks went in, and of course it demoralised the German troops, and our fellas went through quite until they got on the hill overlooking Cambrai itself, and they stopped there. The cavalry came through then. And they went down into Cambrai, and they got very badly mauled. They got very badly mauled, the cavalry. And I think it's murderous sending cavalry over in that condition, in that state.
Yes, it's interesting what you say about the tanks. Did they make quite an impact on you, the fact that there were so many? You know, was it good for morale?
Oh, it was wonderful. The first lot that came in had a huge great wheel at the back, and they used to history of this thing. They were made by the naval over naval dockyards, you know, the first lot. And they had a great big wheel at the back. And of course, they used to steer this thing by turning these wheels at the back to make the tank turn. And all of a sudden, some officer found that he could work the right track or the left track. And he found that if he'd stopped the left track and made the right track go, it turned the tank round. And they did away with the big wheels.